Oh, hi, beloved. How are you doing? How are you feeling? What's going on? What's new with you? You doing okay? You taking your meds? You sleeping okay? Have you showered? Listen, I don't know who needs to hear this, but if you haven't showered recently, if you can't remember, today's the day, baby. You deserve to stand under that hot water and wash your legs. Because I know some of you out there ain't washing your legs because you nasty. And that's a Twitter reference if you weren't on Twitter like 6 months ago. Anyways, remember when our problems were just that white people weren't washing their legs? I don't understand it either. What a world we're living. But hey, welcome back to another episode of A Tiny Revolution. This week I have, we're doing a lot of returning friends. You know, it's like, it's just a kind of a party. Because like, and also so many people are saying yes to interviews because what the hell else are we going to do right now? But today on the podcast is my friend George McHale. George McHale is the founder, one of the founders of churchclarity.org, a organization that scores churches based on their public-facing policies about LGBTQ participation and women in leadership. I was a part of the social media team for them for a while. I loved getting to work with them because really, what Clarity represents is really just like, we just want people to say what the issue is. Like, you know, what is your policy on gay marriage in your church? What's your policy on queer people taking communion or getting baptized, getting hired, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And just simply, because those are simple yes or no questions. Yes, we will do this right now, or no, we will not do this right now. And it really started to push the conversation for churches everywhere, right? Like Clarity is not only important, but it's reasonable. That's why we kept saying Clarity is reasonable. And so many churches have been scored so far. It's amazing. And now, as we've been pushing the conversation and it's been developing, George is one of my really, really good friends. And so we were talking recently about the reality that just like what happens after Clarity, you know, now that we have, you know, everyone's, you know, laying all their cards on the table and actually being honest about how horrible they are. What happens next? What do we do with the data that we have gathered? Additionally, we also talk about Bitcoin, which I think is such a fascinating thing. So like, we got the gospel of Bitcoin plus like a little bit of, you know, some talk about Clarity. It's like a real smorgasbord of delightful things, but, yeah. So I don't know what you're doing right now or where you're headed, but I hope you're doing okay. So tune in with right now, get yourself some tea, coffee, maybe pour yourself a Mexican Coke, the one that has a real ass azucar in it. It's so good. Unless you're trying to stay away from soda or whatever, because it's like not good for you or whatever. But I've been drinking so much Coca-Cola. I don't know what my problem is. It's just that, you know, that sizzling goodness that kind of burns your nose a little bit. You know what I'm saying? Y'all know what I'm saying. Anyways, I'm going to stop distracting myself and tell you to enjoy this conversation with my friend, George McHale. You know, we've had a zillion thoughts, so literally you should start anywhere you want.
We really should just start recording our FaceTime conversations that we have on it.
We really should.
Every other day basis. Since last time we chatted, I have had quite the experience in the church world. I think, you know, from an outsider's perspective, looking at Church Clarity, there's obviously a lot of momentum and a lot of, success, for lack of a better term, just in terms of like how many churches we process, like how many people are finding churches using the Church Clarity database. Mm-hmm. But I think for me personally, my experience with the institutional church has just become more and more estranged.
Right.
So I can't remember exactly where I was at in terms of Riverside.
I think you had just stepped away from Riverside last time we talked.
Oh, really? Okay. But I probably wasn't talking about it publicly at that point.
I don't think you were.
So we should talk about that. I feel like that story.
Sure.
I mean, it's
what happened.
Because what happened at Riverside was bullshit. Like, first, well, I can swear on this thing, right?
Absolutely.
All right, cool.
Carl, who are you talking to?
Just gotta keep it real. It was straight bullshit, and I think having some time to process since then, I'm realizing more and more that it was pretty traumatic of an experience on many levels. But I think the biggest level was that I went into that experience. I went into that job with a pretty vulnerable heart and right. posture towards the church, and so much hope and optimism. Like it was my literal dream job that I landed. Mm-hmm. Moved my family across the country, all that. You know, Donald Trump had just gotten elected, and it was like, oh, we're gonna move to New York, and we're gonna change the world, and we're gonna fight this.
Classic,
you know,
classic,
totally classic. With like the most progressive church on the planet, basically, you know. And then you get there, and it's just not that. It's just like on so many levels, not that. And there was a lot of issues, but what I'll share just briefly about kind of why my time ended there was. There was just rampant sexual harassment by one of the church council people
wow.
that kept going unchecked, right?
Hmm.
And it was just stunning to watch. Like, this is the height of the Me Too movement. This mm-hmm. this is a church that's rhetorically very against, you know, the patriarchy and all that kind of stuff. But here we are, not even cleaning our own house. And so that was like, I just launched Church Clarity, and the spirit of it was very much like a progressive movement. And then to be so disillusioned kind of behind the scenes with what's happening at Riverside, mm-hmm. it was all really disorienting.
Yeah, it sounds like there was this progress that was being made, like where you were like, I'm becoming this champion of saying, tell the truth to everyone about everything all the time. And here we are, and here I am also at the same time, not even able to stomach what's happening in my own congregation.
Exactly.
Because they're not living up to what, you know, like I have my standards and my values, and we claim to have these standards and values, but we're not living them out. So.
Right. Right. And it was just.
And that's like, I think that goes like, you know, everyone's a hypocrite, and like people like get really mad at the church for, you know, being so hypocritical. But this is like a prime example of what we mean, of what they mean mm-hmm. and what we mean too. Like we say that we're, you know, for protecting women, and then whoops-a-daisy, you know, the church council member who has like, you know, his hands in the pocketbooks of the church, or like is like a big donor to the church.
Mm-hmm. It's so bizarre.
Yeah.
And I think it's a microcosm a little bit of just like liberal politics and the Democratic Party. I mean, what we're seeing with Joe Biden and,
oh my God.
Tara Reid just kind of being ignored in this, because it's like, we'll address Me Too and we'll believe women when it's convenient for us. And that was kind of the approach that Riverside ended up taking. And it was very political. It was a calculated move by leadership to not like make a big deal about it. Like you can make a big deal about it to a certain extent. Right. And then you just got to be quiet. Like literally was told to stop putting things in writing about the incident because I was jeopardizing the church from a legal perspective, which is like, I'm sorry, you think I care about like the church getting sued and Rockefeller's money being drained by a little bit? Like, what? So it was just, you're absolutely right. It was like, you're going to make me a hypocrite just by me being here. And that's not okay.
Mm-hmm. And that's really what it, hold on, let me send my friend a text message. He's going to grab iced coffee from sure. the local place.
For sure, priorities. You do not want to miss out on that.
Iced coffee with a
Do you do a lot of edits and posts, or do you just post raw?
Typically, I always post raw. No, I'll, I need to direct this sound into this. I do mostly raw. It's just, I'll probably go edit that out if I remember to.
Cool.
But yeah, keep going. I'm so sorry.
No, you're good. I think I was just, that experience was, very disorienting. And it was very like, okay, what does this mean for Church Clarity?
It's also really strange for two things. I'm noticing, it's like, what I'm hearing is, why is it that I have more integrity than my church? Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like it should be the opposite of that. My church should be calling me into more integrity.
Yes. And I think what we realize again is this isn't a criticism of individual people. Sure, there are decision makers who impact these situations for better or worse. But right. but really what the critique is, and what I was trying to be clear about on my way out, was this is a systemic issue It's the institutional church that is failing. And I think what the bummer was, what the shock was with Riverside was, I would have expected that from the sort of more conservative church that I had just exited, you know, years prior.
Right.
But for to see the same level of hypocrisy and the same level of like just breakdown systemically of not being able to address issues happening in your own house was just like, well, if it's not at Riverside, like where is it? Like where is the quote unquote spirit of God in the church, right? Like where is the movement now? And it left me pretty broken. I think I was giving Riverside sort of my last, all I had left in terms of goodwill towards the institutional church, which is very different than my spiritual journey, by the way, and we can get back to that. But it just, I'm at a place now where I think I'm realizing more and more, I'm still picking up the pieces to that. I'm still experiencing just some like some traumatic, like, I don't know, PTSD. Anytime I think about, oh, maybe I should start thinking about going to church again or whatever. Cause I haven't been back to church since Riverside.
Mm. Sometimes it'd be like that.
Yeah.
And that I think kind of sums up my own interesting feelings about the church now. Coming out of, I'm getting ready to graduate in 2 weeks, apparently, which is
nice.
Lulz. They're doing an online graduation. I already wasn't going to graduation because I think graduations are, sorry, everyone. I think graduations are kind of stupid for me, at least. Like other people who are just like, I'm going to show off. I did it. I'm like, I'm not going to pay money to go to a ceremony. Like, can we just talk about that? There are graduation fees associated with walking across a stage. And you know what this robe is going to do for me in the real world? Jack shit.
Right.
You know what this piece of paper is actually going to do for me in the real world? Not a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So why don't you just print it off, send it to me. I'll hang it on my wall. I know that I did it. So I already wasn't going. And it was so funny. Just like, we're doing graduation online and we're waiving all the graduation fees. We're so, I'm like, you guys.
So generous of you.
Thank God. Thank God for you. But it was just, it was so wild to me. I'm like, I cannot believe like that is your gesture of goodwill towards us right now. Not saying, oh, you know what? For all of you people who don't have anywhere else to live right now, we're going to, you know, you don't have to pay rent for 3 months. Mm. That'd be nice. Because, right. You know, I don't understand why we haven't frozen rent and mortgages in this country yet.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a couple bills that are in consideration that talk about that. And obviously it gets to the systemic issues at an economic level. I mean, we're experiencing so many crises all at once, and all of our trusted institutions are breaking down at a spectacular rate right now.
A spectacular rate.
I mean, I don't know how else to say it. It's universities, like you said, it's churches. It's the entire Fed and what they stand for in terms of just like propping up our economy artificially for so long. It's starting to catch up to them. But I think just kind of going back real quick to wrap up this the trajectory of the story. I think with Church Clarity after Riverside, I clung to Church Clarity as like my new hope for the institutional church, and it was like, all right, Clarity is reasonable. I still believe that. And I think that the further we go down this road, the more we can hold churches accountable. And maybe someday our methodology will include the scenario that I experienced at Riverside, where somehow, I don't know how exactly, but somehow shedding light on how policies are carried out within churches could help prevent some of these scenarios. And for the most part, that has played out in a way where the tool and our methodology has continued to serve its purpose. And I think it has been very helpful for people. But because the goalpost has moved quite a bit, and especially with COVID-19 and kind of what we're seeing laid bare, as you said, it's like, what even is the role of the church anymore? It's like, Clarity is like so obvious, right? We're at this point now where it's almost like Clarity is reasonable. It's like, yeah, it's reasonable. We've kind of proven that to a certain extent.
Yeah. Even Jack Hill Perry's down.
Yeah, exactly. But now it's like with churches shutting down and just all of the disillusionment that we're kind of experiencing across the board. It's like, clarity is reasonable. Then what, you know, like to what extent? And that's where I kind of find myself now is like, what is the usefulness of the institutional church today in 2020? What is it doing beyond just sustaining? Because what we're seeing right now is that obviously it's most prized product, the Sunday experience, is being called into question right now. And it's being rendered and labeled non-essential, which is so hilarious if you really think about it.
Unless you're in Florida.
Yeah, exactly. Where
those are the real Christians, let's be honest.
I mean, it's just incredible to watch how overnight churches have been rendered somewhat useless, even more so than a lot of people perceive them to be prior to them not being able to hold services.
Dude.
So I don't know what to do with that, honestly, Kev. I mean, like, this is where I'm at right now. Like,
And I was just thinking, just like, I don't know how else to respond to that. I think the way that you phrased it was pretty spot on. Of like, we see it as like, this is, so like, here's like the other like pastoral side of me. Cause like on a Sunday morning when I'm like leading a worship service, the people who do show up for that, like it really does do a lot for them. Cause like, I will also say like my church is an exception to the rule in many ways. That's the only reason. Like, I don't care about the church. I care about my local church. And it's not even that I care about my local church. I care about the people who go to my church. My church could close down and I would still be hanging out with the same people. Because not hanging out right now because it's like social distancing and such. Right. But like, these are the people that I go to karaoke with on Wednesday nights. And these are people who like will go to a party on Friday night and smoke a joint in the backyard and then be on the worship stage on Sunday morning because no separation.
Right. Yeah, and I think that's a great point. And I think that's another realization is that, you know, the local church still obviously has a lot to offer people. Community is still something that people crave. But it's almost like when the local church has any sort of affiliation or association with the capital C church. Is when it begins to do all this performative bullshit. Just doesn't matter, you know, like whether it's appeasing board members because you don't want to, whatever, like, I don't even know what the reasoning is to protect someone in that scenario, or it's to not be clear about your policy because you don't want to upset your top donors. Anytime the incentives of people who are making leadership decisions are aligned in such a way where they basically are just like, we just need to survive, which is kind of, or save face. If those are the two things that pastors are being incentivized to do, then what you have is a very unhealthy church.
Yeah. Because the thing is that we know what healthy relationships look like and we know what honest people look like just instinctively, unless we're being lied to and we've been lied to our whole life. And so like, and especially if someone who is like is presenting something that's about them that's not true. Right. The thing about it is I think that we're all noticing clarity is reasonable, like began the call. And then it's like clarity is reasonable and integrity, I would say, like the follow-up statement, like integrity is essential. Amen. Like I would follow that up as like we're starting to live in a world where, you know, what I say on the internet matters now. You know, what I say in real life and on the internet, like it's really interesting how technology and the way that we build community now and we, like really what COVID has forced in so many of us is I think like we recognize like, you know, what is true is going to be true no matter where you are, you know, which is why like, you know, you can have, you know, our 15-30 people on a Zoom call on Sunday morning and it'd be a holy experience. And then all these other churches who are like losing thousands and thousands in donations every single Sunday because they don't have 1,000 people walking in their door. I think it's like what you said, like, you know, their number one product, their Sunday morning experience is no longer viable.
Right.
And it also like, I look at it as like, oh, you didn't prepare anybody for eventual, like for actual living.
Right.
All you've been doing is anesthetizing them to their own pain. And now they're in the middle of all this pain. And now, like, they weren't prepared. Mm-hmm. Like, what I love about my community is, like, we're so big on therapy and reaching out and self-care that, like, that's how we're getting through this. We're getting it through it together. So, like, I love, again, my local church. And that's what it could be.
Right.
That's what spiritual community could be. Mm-hmm. But it's not. Mm-hmm. And by and large, like, I get, my friend was just like, my mother made me to, like, watch a Sunday service with her on Facebook from, like, North Point Ministries. And I'm like, I watched 3 minutes of it. I have never seen, like, they, it was so dramatic. The camera, it was like watching a fucking episode of American Idol. Like, big production, big movement, panning the camera.
Yeah.
And of course, like, they pre-recorded it because they're not going to do that live, because that's not how it works for them. Because why would they actually want to interact with people?
Right. No, you can't get Lulz. That. You can't get that level of quality if you do it live. And I mean, a quality production, I should say. Yeah, but I think this whole thing about, you know, local community being what we're all ultimately trying to get at, and what the current iteration of the institutional church distracts us from, is kind of where I think humanity is headed next. I think another great example, you know, you mentioned your church, sounds like, is carrying it out perfectly. They're sort of unaffected by COVID-19 in that, you know, what's truly mattered about the community continues to be revealed, and, mm-hmm. and that you guys continue to gather and care for one another and all that kind of stuff. I think another great example of this is Forefront Church in New York.
Yes.
Where Sarah New, who was one of the co-founders of Church Clarity,
shout out Sarah New.
Yes, recently stepped down from her leadership position. And
I'm just kidding.
No, to take on a bigger role within the Forefront community. And it's been really cool to watch how, you know, the work that they're doing in response to this really is the church made manifest. It's the hands and feet of Jesus, so to speak. Mm. You know, it's everything you're talking about. And they're also really being intentional, being in New York, obviously.
Yeah. And I think the question that comes up for so many people and for me is, like, I know why aren't bigger churches doing this? Because they're not interested in that.
They're not interested in it.
And it's obvious.
They're not even a little bit interested in it because, again, it doesn't, their incentives aren't aligned in such a way for them to be motivated to do anything beyond what they've been doing. So it's like when they were told, all right, you guys can't have services anymore, it's like there's this immediate identity crisis that sets in. Like, oh shit, if I can't mm-hmm. hold Sunday services, if I can't get up there and preach on Sunday, who am I? What am I going to do? You know, they never occurred to a lot of them that, like, well, actually, you know, the church exists in your local community for a reason, and that is to respond to the needs of your local community. So actually what Church Clarity did in response to all this really early on was, we created a survey for the churches in our database to indicate how they're responding to COVID-19. So are you holding services in person? Like, this is before, like, the mandated shutdowns. Are you having online services? Do you have a facility that you're willing to make available in the event that local hospitals are overwhelmed and you need to make space available? You know, like these are the kind of things that I feel like the church should be mobilized and activated for in times like this, to actually mm-hmm. care for our neighbors and actually be there in crisis. And right. just the lack of response to this in a really meaningful way and at a national level is really eye-opening.
Yeah, it is eye-opening. For some, it's A, you've got, like, you know, I'm covered in the blood of Jesus people who are just so insulated in their little world that they can't see anything fearful, otherwise they'll shut down, apparently. I don't know, like, why are you the way that you are? there's that person. And then there is, I don't know. It's like, I have this pit in the middle of my stomach because I'm picturing that one conservative pastor who is literally yelling at the camera, COVID-19.
Oh, God.
And there's, like,
yeah,
breath of God. I'm like, what are you doing? Jesus said, don't pray in public. This is what he was talking about. You look like a fucking idiot. Mm-hmm. Do that at home because other people in the world don't understand what you're doing and you're making a mockery mm-hmm. out of prayer, if I'm being honest.
And the name of Jesus and Christianity and the Bible and all of it. It's like all
and like become a it's, lie, like, it's like you're a fool.
We've become a laughing stock, you know. And I think
and that's why there's so many of us like, oh, I'm not like there. That's why I'm just like, oh, I don't want to be a part of the church anymore because I'm just like, this is a joke,
right?
Like I can't take them seriously anymore, and I don't. And so that's why there's so part of me that's like, am I a part of the church anymore?
Not part of the institutional church. I think I'm more increasing.
The eternal body of Christ, the mystical body of Christ. Yes, amen. I'm a part of that.
Absolutely. We are the church, after all, is mm-hmm. what they keep telling us. But then they're like, you are the church. Can you also give us 10% of your income so we can keep like the lights on? And it's like, wait,
I'm like, what? No, shouldn't you give me 10% of your income? Right. Exactly. Since I am technically doing the work?
So they've become like this other layer of government. It's like, we already have one government. I don't need to be taxed by you guys too to provide no value.
read them.
So I just think like there's a lot of great pastors doing great work. You know, again, Jonathan Williams, Chris Romine, Adam Phillips in Portland. Like
there's a zillion really great people.
Cody Deese, my boy Cody in Atlanta.
Ugh, we love him.
But like, And the reason they're great is because they share a lot of these sentiments. So they see it, they get it, and they're like, how do we evolve from here? You know, what does a cohesive movement even look like among the is that even possible? Like, that's the question I'm asking more and more from a Church Clarity standpoint. You know, mm-hmm. part of the vision with Church Clarity really is to ultimately, yes, call out harmful ambiguity, but even more than that is to highlight integrity, as you're saying. It's to highlight the verified mm-hmm. clear churches who are willing to disclose their policies and recognize the value of being clear. Mm-hmm. And so part of like the theory was, all right, let's get all these churches together and maybe they can be more effective just being aware of one another, like that they mm-hmm. that they exist. Almost like a you know, new kind of association or whatever denomination, whatever language you want to use. But I'm just like increasingly skeptical that mm-hmm. there's enough energy and momentum among churches who have been sort of faithful in that regard. They've held their integrity. They've not gotten caught up in the big production or trying to keep the big donors happy, but they're really trying to faithfully serve their communities. And that's more than enough for them, you know, like the idea of trying to partner with another church or trying to be a part of something bigger than their local community, it might be a bridge too far. And mm-hmm. I think that's okay, actually, is kind of what I'm coming to. But it is a paradigm shift from kind of what we came out of, I think.
I'm wondering about... Yeah, that's what you said before. I don't know if like a cohesive movement is possible, because like a universal, like because like so many people are still so motivated by like adhering to a statement of beliefs.
Right.
I even hear it like among my Episcopal friends who are arguing, like just like, you know, people are getting real mad about like sacramental theology and like who's allowed to bless, you know, communion. Mm-hmm. What do they call it there? Eucharist. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Who's allowed to bless the Eucharist? And I'm like, you guys, like, if something is getting in the way of an experience of God, it's your duty to remove it. Mm-hmm. And if I've said this to a couple people, it's like, your spirituality is only as good as it is helpful. Mm-hmm. And so I think this is showing us, like, what is valuable and what is not valuable.
Right. And I do think, like, with the Episcopal Church, like, I want to be careful not to throw the baby out the bathwater.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think about the Orthodox Church, the Coptic Orthodox Church specifically, the tradition that I came out of. And, you know, they were actually one of the first churches that I saw that started taking this seriously and started, making adjustments and even canceling services, which is unheard of. I mean, you're talking about a church, one of the oldest church traditions on the planet that, like, rain, shine, like, or even death, like to the point where if mm-hmm. a priest is performing a service and he dies on the altar, the deacons are instructed to continue service until the end. Like, that's how intense they are with making sure that the liturgy goes on. And they're like, yo, we should probably, you know, not hold services this week. I was talking to one of the leaders at Church Clarity, Jess, who's an Episcopal priest in training. And they're saying that there is something about the importance of space and time and being physically present that mm-hmm. is really kind of like the whole point of the Eucharist. Right. And there's something about not wanting to just kind of, let's just do it on video because we kind of have to right now. There's something about like resisting that temptation that mm-hmm. that I think is a little bit like beautiful.
Yeah.
I don't know.
When explained in that way, I really like it.
But I get what you're saying too. Like, if that's not part of your personality and you're just trying, you know, you're just creating barriers for people because you want like control.
And that's the thing is, like, I wonder, because like, if it's explained in that way, hey, we're not going to do Eucharist right now, not because you're not holy enough to bless it, but because like this is something we do as a community together.
In flesh.
Yeah, in the flesh. Mm-hmm. So really it's just like, I mean, for people who are, it's important, you can do it in your home. Mm-hmm. But I don't know.
Here's the thing. Like, so what? All this, right? Like, what of this? And I think it really, like, we talk about like a movement. Okay, there's no movement. So what? Mm-hmm. I think it really just comes down to just the practical needs of people. And so when I talk about connecting churches and I talk about, okay, what does it look like for Verified Clear Churches to know about each other and all that kind of stuff, what I'm anticipating is people are going to need a broader community now more than ever, which means like connections to jobs specifically, right? Like, people need jobs. People need to have an income so that they can provide and eat food and survive. So that's like first and foremost, but also just sharing best practices and like, right, not reinventing the wheel every 2 seconds. So I think if you can accomplish that somehow by like connecting churches who are somewhat like-minded or at least aligned in terms of clarity or integrity, whatever you want to call it, I think that could actually be impactful, especially when you start talking about like job boards and you start talking about like, you know, the types of services that even like, I know you provide for people, but you know, the type of spiritual direction that people need now more than ever, they need access to that. And they need to know who to trust and where to get that from. And so that could be something would be a useful thing that emerges from a cohesive movement. But outside of that, like just association for the sake of association to like make your numbers bigger and be like, look how big we are and how many churches we are. Like, that is just so not what needs to take place now. If it's not practically meeting the needs of people, I'm over it.
Mm-hmm. And that's really what it boils down to is like, are you helping?
Right.
And why is my computer still fucking making noises when I put it on do not disturb? I don't know.
I hate that. It's like, oh, it's weird. I thought do not disturb meant like you wouldn't.
Don't fucking make any sounds. And that also shows you like where I am like emotionally today. Like, I have very little patience for things, apparently.
Yeah, we're all a little bit on edge.
Yeah. I think we're all like, if we're on a scale of like 10 being I'm stressed out and I can't function and 0 being everything's fine, mm-hmm. I think we're all sitting about around a 5 at all times right now.
Right, at minimum.
At minimum. Just like the stress of the world, the stress of not knowing what's happening, the stress of having a government that is like Georgia, like the governor can't. Oh my fuck. We could have had Stacey Abrams, but we have fucking Brian Kemp who wants to open things up. And then mayors saying, actually, we're not going to open up. Mm-hmm. Sorry, everyone. I know that you got excited by what the governor said, but guess what? He's a liar.
Yeah, I mean, it's all just politics. They're all playing the same game, right? Trump is delegating authority to the governors. The governors are delegating authority to the mayors, and the mayors are basically the ones who
have to do the right thing.
Yeah, they're the ones that have to lead right now. And that's another testament to why local leadership is the future. You know, mm-hmm. So we talked about it on a church level, but like, really, I think that's another thing that's being revealed is like trying to manage a crisis like this across 50 states, across a giant landmass that contains, mm-hmm. you know, 320 million people or whatever, is not that feasible. And you end up delegating authority locally anyway. Mm. So I think that's something to pay attention to is where all that goes.
Yeah. Both like on a political level, mm-hmm. on, and then like if we're like looking at the spiritual, like the community that I find myself a part of right now is like has been an online community, like one of the communities I've been a part of. Mm. I am a part of. Wow. I can't use words. But like the thing with like working with people online and trying to create, I feel like what's the evolution of the church is that's happening, mm-hmm. is, well, like, for example, like my last sermon I just preached, today's Thursday? Yeah, yesterday, feels like 47 years ago. I preached my last sermon of seminary and yes, thank you.
Coffee has arrived.
Blessed be the fruit. May the Lord open.
Too soon. Pussy. Too soon.
Oh my God. The thing is just like, this is why I'm getting my passport ready, because I am fully convinced that like, if 2016 pans out the way if 2020 pans out the way 2016 did, I'm out. I'm out. I'm gonna go somewhere. I don't know where I'm gonna go, but I'm gonna go there.
Yeah.
What I'm finding interesting too is, as there's been this like decrease in like church communities or like activity within church community, is that what we're seeing too is like, how do we take what we're learning and make it accessible, make it online? Like everything is like, oh, like I have a much bigger reach than I thought I did. But now people are at home, it's almost like they're forced to get creative with it. Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
So that they can also stay grounded.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's never been a better time to launch a online church. That's for sure. Mm. But I think
let's start something called Clarity Church.
Yes, I love it. Don't tell me.
But not associated with Church Clarity though. Totally different entity.
Right. Absolutely. But we would be verified clear on Church Clarity
for sure. We would actually be on the top spot at all the times.
Yeah. So
it's like, where are they? Anywhere you are.
But like, I think ultimately, anybody who grew up in the church or grew up Christian or whatever, and it meant something to them in any way, shape, or form, it has been on this journey of trying to find the truth, trying to seek truth, right? That's ultimately what we're trying to do. And that's why we've been disillusioned with various, theologies and things like that. And for me, I think the other major thing that has happened and transpired ever since launching Church Clarity, leaving Riverside, has been just reevaluating the foundation by which everything in our world has been built on, the church, politics, all of it. And it really comes down to the money, and the way that our money works is completely fucked.
And, go off, sis. We're ready for it.
So like, it's been a weird kind of transition. I've been obviously talking about Bitcoin a lot more than I previously was. I've been in it for over 2 years now, but I've kind of been slow to publicly discuss it.
To come out of your Bitcoin closet?
Yeah, I wanted to understand it a little bit more before I just kind of started popping off at the mouth. But now, and especially with COVID-19, like it has become very apparent that what we're doing is not sustainable. The money that we have is not our money. That the people who control our financial system, the central banks, the Fed, politicians, they call the shots to an extent that keeps us enslaved to this system that just isn't working, doesn't work for the regular person. Mm-hmm. And so we need to do something about that. And so with Bitcoin, what exists is an opportunity to actually do something. And so I'm all about practical solutions, as I've been talking about, and that's why I'm so attracted to Bitcoin, because I think the most important thing people can be doing right now is asking really hard questions about money. These stimulus packages, this money printing that's happening, these bailouts that continue to happen, we should be paying really close attention, and that kind of stuff should piss us off more than even, I'm going to say it, more than unclear churches. The Fed should piss you off more than Judah Smith pisses me off. Like, it's that level of, we live in generational shifting times. Like, what's happening right now is akin to the American Revolution or the Great Reformation. Like, all of those were accompanied with major advances in technology. And here we are again. Information is becoming ubiquitous. People are asking more questions. People are becoming more curious. And on top of that, you have this tool now in Bitcoin that's been created, that's been out in the world for 11 plus years, with becoming more secure and more diversified with each day and more valuable. So I don't know how much you want to get into Bitcoin, but I did feel like I wanted to share at least a little bit about kind of like my journey and my emphasis on that being like more urgent, I feel like, than anything else.
No, like, and I think that is an important thing, because the thing that scares, like you pointed it out to me, and it also scares me, is that like it shows a few things. It's one, money's not real. Mm-hmm. Like, we have like, and it the proof is, you know, all of a sudden we have a country who is sending $1,200 checks to everyone who paid taxes last year, which means that universal basic income is not only possible, but apparently we can just do it with the snap of a finger. Mm-hmm. The second thing is just like printing all these money to bail out all, like, why are we bailing out the airline industry again?
Why are we bailing out cruise?
Anyone.
Bus? Yeah, anyone.
I mean, unless regular people, just like, right. You can't tell me to stay home for 3 months and not allow me to go do work and then ask me to pay back. Oh, we're going to put a furlough on your, like, it's like that fucking video you sent me earlier. Yes,
so good.
Just like, how are you going to like tell me, like, you know, you don't have to pay your rent for 3 months, but then in the fourth month you have to pay back all 3 months of rent when I haven't been working for 3 months, Brenda? Like,
right. And it isn't that, I don't know that money isn't real. It's that our money isn't real. It's that.
Yeah.
It's,
the US dollar.
Yeah. It's just fiat currency, which means money by decree, which means whatever the government says it is, it is. So fiat currency that the government owns basically funds our wars. It funds any sort of policy that we like or don't like. But now what they're proving, what they're showing is that, like you said, it's all arbitrary. So listen, if you're going to print trillions and trillions of dollars, what are we even arguing about anymore? Like, why even get together at Congress and, you know, fight for these bills and your pet projects or whatever? Why not just like fund them all? Just fire up the money printer.
Yeah.
And the reason, the answer to that question is if they just made it rain on us all, then we would actually be a little bit more free than we are. Right. But, so they give you just a little bit to make sure that you don't become so free that you quit your job and you go, you know, create art, or you go.
There you go.
You know what I mean?
You get so free that you're just like, you know what? I think I need to pursue my passion.
Exactly. You start waking up and you start asking questions. Right now, they have us in this matrix where it's like, you get up, you go to your job, you come home, you eat dinner, you watch TV, you go to sleep, you do it again. And they want to keep that system. That system works great for the powers that be, and they want to keep that going. So they also want to avoid riots and revolution and social unrest. And so these stimulus checks are like a release valve, right? And I think that what's going to happen is,
I'm not the only one. Thank God.
Sorry.
You're fine.
My mom's trying to FaceTime me. Sorry, Mom. I'll call you back. What's going to happen is as the dollar gets devalued as a result of just increasing the money supply, and people keep waking up to like, hey, wait a minute, why, you know, kind of the stuff we're talking about, why don't you just fund everything? If you're going to fund that over there, if you're going to fund Carnival Cruise Lines, for God's sake.
Fucking Carnival Cruise Lines. Also, like, the cruise line industry is just like not
essential,
ethical.
Yeah, that too.
Like, the amount of like there's so many like workers, and so like, because they're not technically on U.S. soil. Wow, my southern accent. Because they're not on U.S. soil, they can pay jack shit to their international workers who are aboard.
Right. Yeah.
It's bullshit.
Well, and so here's the thing, and this is why I'm so passionate about Bitcoin, is because at its core, It is a money that is not owned by anybody. Nobody controls it. Nobody arbitrarily gets to print it. There are 21 million Bitcoins that will ever exist in existence in circulation. We're up to about 18.3 million or something like that currently mined. So we're almost, and then the last, 2.5 million or so is going to take another 100 years to mine. So we still, the supply schedule is still going to take a while. So this is really well thought out, pre-programmed, decentralized money that nobody owns. And that right there provides the opportunity for a nonviolent revolution, something that's mm-hmm. never existed in history. If people simply just opt out of the corrupt money system that we have and embrace a new type of money, money that is based on a real like economic fundamentals, which are, you know, what is the purpose of money? It's a method of exchange, right? So like we can mm-hmm. exchange value that we create in a way that makes sense, because when we're transacting, we don't necessarily have like the barter system isn't practical anymore. Mm-hmm. we're too complex of humans. And so having a medium of exchange that is reliable, that is what's considered sound money, is something that would fundamentally reshape society from the ground up, because you don't have bureaucrats who can on a whim print a bunch of money and then go to war. Because that's mm-hmm. that's the only way to fund wars. I mean, fiat currency was created by the Bank of England in order to fund their wars all across the globe. Mm. And so we need to move away from that and the only way to do that, I think, is to mm-hmm. recognize that the government doesn't have to control our money. That's not a necessary part of the government's function. That's something mm-hmm. that we've just kind of like embraced arbitrarily and we've kind of like fallen into, but like it doesn't mm-hmm. have to be that way. We can control our own money. Sorry, I know I'm kind of going off right now, but let me just think about it this
way. No, keep going.
Think about it this way. Think about how complicated it is to transact. Okay. If I want to send you money, right? Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, I have $10 and I want to get that to you. I can do a couple things right now. I can use Venmo, I can use like a Cash App. But like even before I get there, right, I have to have a social security number, I have to have an ID, I have to like sign up, I have to mm-hmm. have a bank account, which is a whole nother sign up process. There's all these intermediaries dictating our transaction. Like I just want to send you $10. Like that shouldn't be that difficult. And by mm-hmm. the way, I also not only want to send you money, I want to send my friends and family in Egypt money without jumping through all these additional hoops. It's my money, right? And so what the government has done is created all of these roadblocks essentially for us to transact. But imagine being able to, with Bitcoin, you can download a wallet for free on the App Store and we can start transacting right now without you needing to give the wallet a bunch of personal information, your social security number, your bank account, your routing, like all that. Mm-hmm. None of that. You just, I have a wallet, I have value in it. I would like to now move this value from this wallet to this wallet. That's it. That's all anybody needs to know about this transaction. Mm-hmm. So much simpler. You cut out all the middlemen. You cut out all of the trust and permission that's required to transact. Because if you think about mm-hmm. it, that's how they control us. They control us by dictating how and when we can transact and to what limits we can transact. Mm-hmm. And
like I can only withdraw $300 from my ATM at any given time.
Bullshit. So arbitrary. It's your Why? Money. For what? Right? You start mm-hmm. you start realizing it's not your money. It's not actually your money. Mm-hmm. It's the bank's. Not only is it the bank's money when they're holding on to it, it's the federal government's money when they decide they're going to print a bunch of it. Like, yeah. What do you think it does when they print $3 trillion? What does that do?
It's called dilution. Exactly. It means that my dollars are going to be worth less in the world.
Exactly. And that takes time. And there's, you know, all these complicated economic layers to it, with the US dollar being like the dominant, the global reserve currency. So it's going to be strong for a while, even though they're printing all this, but at the detriment of every other currency on the planet, every other country on the planet. So mm-hmm. the US is throwing its weight around right now because it can. But the whole system needs to be thrown out because we need sovereign money that just mm-hmm. serves the function of.
You know what's so interesting is like you saying this, like when you first were telling me, just like this, like would like centralize and like or it would decentralize money and give it the power back to the people. And I'm already thinking, I'm just like, this is what my mother would say is the mark of the beast.
Yeah, totally. Well,
because just like they said, like, because again, like my fearful upbringing is just like, you have to have this one mark to do commerce. I'm like, you know, and they're just like, the Antichrist is going to bring about one world order and bring about one government and everyone's going to be peaceful and one religion. And I'm like, that sounds pretty dope. If I'm being peace.
Yeah.
And not dying. Like that sounds, you know, sign me up.
Yeah. But I think actually what you, I'm glad you brought that up because I think what you realize when you really go down that rabbit hole is, in my opinion, at least USD is the mark of the beast.
Like, yo, come on, say it.
Like it's evil, corrupt money that is, it funds mass genocides and corrupt politicians. And
unless you have it, you can't do anything in the world.
Exactly.
Wow. It is the mark of the beast.
It's absolutely the mark. In the whole, and the US dollar is valuable everywhere. Anywhere you go, anybody takes the US dollar, and it's the only currency that's like that. So that's something to pay attention to for sure if we want to talk about theology. Now, what we're going to see with post-COVID stuff is the increased digitization of the US dollar. So they're going to move away from paper money more and more because paper money is, you know, you can still execute pretty anonymous transactions with paper money. So that's less control that they have over you. So if it's digital, then the more digital
they
it
can
is,
track that because like, exactly. Here's the thing. Just like, I got to pay my weed dude in cash.
Exactly.
That's the rules.
Yeah, exactly. Otherwise, you know, and that's how they keep, you know, their will in place by like not letting the weed dealers open up bank accounts. They arbitrarily pick, or like sex workers, or anyone who they politically deem unfit, you know, to receive the mark, they exclude from the system. And so Bitcoin offers a solution to that very big problem. Not only that, sorry, let me just say a couple more things.
No, you're good. I'm loving this. I'm getting a huge education right now. This is good for me.
Yeah. Okay, good. So 21 million Bitcoin ever will exist. Okay. This is the invention of digital scarcity. And this is what most people don't understand. It's like the most important part of all this. Mm-hmm. So what's the opposite of printing money? It's having a fixed supply. And what is that going to do to the value of Bitcoin over the years? You know, Bitcoin is a long-term hold, first of all. So it's not a speculative asset like a lot of people think. Like if you're listening to this and you're considering maybe I'll jump in or whatever, don't think of it like, okay, I'm going to buy it today at whatever, $7,500, and it's going to go up to $8,500 and then I'm going to sell. No, that's not it at all. That's extremely boring. Most people who are long-term, you know, holders of Bitcoin see this as a 5, 10, 20-year play where literally society is going to be overturned by what happens when people realize scarcity, right? When like when you can't buy it anymore, or when it becomes increasingly difficult to buy, forget about the value for a second. That's going to be the thing that drives the value because, you know, I have some Bitcoin. I'm not selling it because I understand the value to me is different than when I look it up online and, you know, it says what like the US dollar value is. That has really very little to do with how I perceive the value of the Bitcoin that I hold. And so I think our relationship to money is fundamentally being called into question and being changed. And so I think when people realize the scarcity aspect, they will realize the value proposition. And, you know, Bitcoin has a lot of upside in terms of the number go up, like the value, the value of it actually going up.
Yeah, because I'm also thinking like this is in some ways when it's really like you said this to me, it's opting out of the system and really like that is the only, because like the system, the game that we're playing, only one kind of person wins, you know, and if another person like, you know, say like, you know, if I make it, if I happen to get really rich, which like low key kind of hoping for that because I deserve to be blessed and shit. Just kidding. But what you're talking about is like, you know, if money really is power, and it really is in some ways, when you take it's, but it's only powerful because we've invested our power into it.
Yes.
So Bitcoin and changing the rules of how economy works. Because like money's not technically evil. It's just that when all the money just lives in one place and isn't flowing, mm-hmm. that's the problem.
Mm-hmm. Yep. When it's hoarded and when it's, and that when people have, people at the top have access to the money printer. That's the real problem with printing money. Isn't even so much the inflation that it's going to create. It's the inequality that it furthers, because guess who's going to get first dibs? It's right. Steve Mnuchin. It's the, you know, it's all the corporations. Like, they get first access to all that money. It's all the banks. And so meanwhile,
why am I not bailed out?
Right.
I haven't done anything wrong.
Right. That's exactly it. And so it's just not just, it's an unjust. I'm reading a great book. I highly recommend, very heady. It's called The Ethics of Money Production. And it basically just explores this idea of how unethical it is to basically delegate the responsibility of the money creation to a group of people without the consent of the community of users. So in other words, if you want to pass a bailout, a $3 trillion bailout, then guess who should be the ones voting on? That should be something that would be like a referendum where everybody gets a vote on whether or not you're allowed to print this much of my fucking money. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. don't just tell me you're going to print $3 trillion and you're going to give me $1,200 or whatever the hell. Like, that's not your call. That's fundamentally what the problem is right now that we're not seeing. We're like, oh, Medicare for all. And yes, absolutely. But before you even get there, we have to talk about what else they're funding with their corrupt money and see the bigger picture, I guess. Mm-hmm. Mm. So
I'm ready for the revolution.
Well, all you got to do is start buying some Bitcoin. Like that's where I'm at.
Step one.
Honestly, like, and it doesn't benefit me. Like, I think I've come to the point where it's like Bitcoin seems pretty inevitable to me. Like, I've studied it. Mm-hmm. And I feel like pretty solid in its long-term proposition. So I'm not like, I'm evangelizing in a way that's like, I don't want people to miss out. And I think actually it will be helpful for society if more and more people adopt it. But mm-hmm. like, I don't personally gain. It's not like a company that I own. I'm like trying to watch like the stock go up or whatever.
No.
So like, it's just something that I believe in, and that, you know, my evangelistic nature is like, causes me to just talk about it.
Well, it's one of those things where just like, it's not that you're passionate about Bitcoin, it's that you're passionate about, well, yes, you're passionate about Bitcoin, but you're passionate about it because it offers a way out.
Yes.
It offers freedom.
Yes.
In some ways, in a lot of ways.
Yes.
And it may not happen soon. Mm-hmm. However, look at the world we live in right now. We didn't think we would ever be in a pandemic where we all had to stay home and like totally change our business models.
Exactly.
But yet here we are doing retreats online and moving our churches online and moving our transactions online. Like, to me, it makes complete sense. And also, if I believe that nothing can overcome the kingdom of heaven, and the kingdom of heaven is going to happen because it's God's will, and I'm not in charge of like trying to stop God's will. And if God's will is that all should be saved, meaning like, you know, we all are liberated in real time, then you're right.
Yes.
Then this is a point. This is a tool towards liberation. And not to mention, our dear sister Audre Lorde always told us, the master's tools can't dismantle the master's house, baby.
Mm, that's it, man. It's like new wineskins. It's all of the analogies, like we're talking about with the mark of the beast. All this is playing out in real time, and it's definitely is a weird time to be alive. Like, his history books will write about this, but I just think we have to pay closer attention to the money. And I think even people who consider themselves Christians have a moral responsibility to really examine and to really hold accountable people who are mistreating the most vulnerable. You know what the biggest group of marginalized people is? Like, the biggest group that we all have something in common. It's not race, it's not sexuality, it's not gender.
It's poor.
Yes.
It's the poor.
Yes, exactly. And this is something Reverend William Barber has emphasized throughout his, I think, entire career, you know, the Poor People's Campaign and all that, which I think is great. And I think the socialism, the socialist movement in America is kind of coming from that same ideological thought of like, we need more economic justice. Economic justice is the foundation of all other types of justice. And that's really what I see in Bitcoin. It's economic justice. It's a jubilee. It's a reset. If you can reset the current global economic order by basically rendering all these debts as worthless as the paper that they're written on, simultaneously, like, let's figure out a way to get prisoners released. Like, let's really live into a brand new era where this becomes this COVID crisis becomes like a jubilee, a reset. Mm-hmm. Like, let's look around and just acknowledge that everything sucks, right? And now let's do something about it. And let's not have it look like previous revolutions where we all take arms and we kill a bunch of people that don't agree with us. Let's instead just do logical analysis of the problem, which we can easily do by following the money and seeing how corrupt it is. And then let's look around and find solutions. So that journey, that train of thought has led me to Bitcoin, and I hope that some of this stuff will help others.
I love it.
Oh, real quick. One last thing. Because it's easy to go down this rabbit hole and then get distracted by blockchain and cryptocurrency and all this other shit. Do yourself a favor. If you're going to look into this, just at least at the beginning, just ignore everything else. Ignore Ethereum. Ignore all these other shit coins. Like, they're cool. They're interesting for long-term prospects, but they're not, it's not what I'm talking about. I guess I should clarify. It's not the revolution. Those are interesting technological things that may have some use cases in the future. Who knows? Maybe not. But right now they're all completely worthless. Bitcoin, the OG.
Mm-hmm. It's really the only one that's got any sort of traction on a larger scale.
Yes. It's got the traction, the network effects. It's got the most important part of it though, is that it's truly decentralized. There is no CEO of Bitcoin. There is no headquarters of Bitcoin.
Bitcoin just exists in the world as a thing.
Exactly.
It is truly in some ways, an omnipotent object.
One of these days we should smoke a J and talk about the origin story, because that shit is wild.
Next time on A Tiny Revolution. That was my conversation with George McHale. If you liked that and you want to follow more of his stuff, you can follow him on Twitter at gmchale. That's G-M-E-K-H-A-I-L. You can also check him out at churchclarity.org and Church Clarity across social media. George, thanks for a great time. Thank you for an honest conversation. And I love you. You're a wonderful human. Let's do this again, please. And with that, let's go ahead and wrap up the show. I need to tell you, if you like this show, if you think it's important, if you want to have more conversations and more content like this, or just you like me and you want to support my work, you can do that really easily at patreon.com/thekevingarcia. There are some new perks happening. There is workshops. There are mugs. There are stickles. There's so many great little perks. And I'm even designing an exclusive sweatshirt just for y'all. So if that is something you're into free shit and you're into prizes and into extra content. And if you just want to become a part of, making the world a better place, you can go to patreon.com/thekevingarcia and learn more. Thank you so much to everyone who supports the show and makes this work possible. I love you. You're incredible. Another way you can support the show, leave us a rating on iTunes. It does help it. And then also share us on social media, because a lot of, you know how many people still do not listen to podcasts still? Too many people. I think that's everything. I love you. Make sure you're taking your meds. Make sure you're going outside, getting in the sun a little bit. Make sure you're moving your body in a way that feels good. Make sure you're eating. Take a shower and wash your legs. Listen, y'all know who you is. Make yourself a smoothie. I love you. This has been another episode of A Tiny Revolution. My name is Kevin Garcia, and I'll talk to you next time, babe. Bye.